Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast, your audio source for all things Michigan football, basketball, and recruiting. I'm your host, Zach Shaw. We've got a new guest host with me, Alejandro Zuniga. He's new to the site, hitting the ground running. You know, his first week on the job was covering the Michigan football team's Big Ten championship. Now he's stuck with a little bit more basketball duty than he probably wanted this year. But Alejandro, before we start, we have a loaded episode talking about Mike Elston. We're going to talk about some of the transfer portal departures, the draft declarations, kind of everything but Jim Harbaugh related to the Michigan football team. We'll wait until there's actually some concrete info on Jim before we have big discussions about it. But first of all, thank you for stepping in and go ahead and tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, what you're about. And maybe a little bit about what these first couple weeks have been like for you.
Yeah, Zach, it's fantastic to be here. It's fantastic to be working for the Michigan Insider and with 24/7. So I'm Alejandro. I went to the University of Michigan, graduated in 2015. While I was there, I worked for the Michigan Daily, covered some of Brady Hoke's final season at Michigan, and then the beginning of the Jim Harbaugh era. Post-college, I dabbled in sports journalism before taking kind of a different direction in Wisconsin and then down in Costa Rica, actually. So I am just back in the States for the first time in 4 years and seem to have come back right at the right time because, like you said, that first week was jumping right into the Big Ten championship game and going down to Indianapolis and seeing something that, quite honestly, I did not expect to see last year and did not expect to see maybe in a few years. But that was a ton of fun. Went down to Miami for the college football playoff and now transitioning to basketball and keeping my fingers crossed that there are basketball games to cover.
Right. Well, eventually they'll play again. They're expected to play tonight against Illinois. We are due for a basketball podcast. So there will be one in the coming days, but given that we couldn't get recording until Friday, we were like, well, let's see how they look against Illinois first, and then we can add some commentary there. So this is a football episode. Of course, you can read all of our stories over at the michiganinsider.com, michigan.247sports.com. From me, Alejandro, Sam, Steve, Bryce, Josh Newkirk, and then our national team as well. Lots going on. I mean, it really is incredible how college football really, I would almost say doesn't have an off season anymore with the transfer portal. Obviously Michigan had a pretty big couple of weeks, both in the transfer portal and in the draft declaration, because their season didn't end. A lot of teams, you know, a lot of players hit the portal before you don't have to call it a meaningless bowl game, but they're inconsequential bowl game. Some players declare for the draft and say they won't play in the bowl game. Michigan didn't have any of that, so they really didn't have any sort of off-season, I guess we'll call it what it is, transactional news. There wasn't a transaction wire until January for the Wolverines, so we'll catch up on a lot of that. But first, I think this almost got swept under the rug a little bit. Michigan hired Notre Dame defensive line coach Mike Elston. Yeah, I guess it hasn't been officially announced, but our 24/7 Tom Loy, who covers Notre Dame, does a great job for them, kind of broke the news. This is a big deal hire, in my opinion. He's a former Michigan player. He's always been kind of linked to the defensive line coach job, but it was always like he loves Notre Dame. He's happy there. He's been with Brian Kelly for so long, doesn't really want to leave. Well, Brian Kelly left, and it sounds like Elston did not want to go south. He didn't want to, he's from Ohio, played for Michigan, has coached at Eastern Michigan, Central Michigan, and Cincinnati before Notre Dame. So he wanted to stay in the area. And then when Sean Nua departed for USC, apparently Helston, I don't know if he was the first call, but I got to think he was one of the first calls. I mean, this is a guy who's produced not quite as many NFL draft picks as Michigan has, but nine in the last 9 years, if my counting is right. He's recruited well. He's a big part of Notre Dame's recruiting success on the defensive side and on the offensive line, really. He's been the primary or secondary recruiter by my count for 41 four- or five-star recruits, and that's over the past decade and change. So this is someone who really, I think, is a win on all fronts. I haven't met him. I haven't seen him in practice, but the defensive lines Notre Dame had, the NFL draft picks, the recruiting success that they've had. I think this is as my only question would be, how does he mesh with maybe some younger coaches like Mike McDonald, who's actually the coordinator of the defense? Steve Klingscale is kind of the pass game defensive coordinator, so to speak, unofficially, I believe. You know, how does he mesh with the coaching staff? But at the same time, you know, I think he was spotted today at a coaching clinic in Lansing. You know, with all the Michigan assistants or many of the Michigan assistants, he's wearing his 97 national champion leather jacket. I mean, I don't think Michigan should always try to hire former players, but sometimes the opportunity there is just too enticing to pass up. Alejandro, your thoughts? You did a story kind of getting to know, or you know, things to know about Mike Elston. Your thoughts on this hire and kind of the impact that it can have?
Well, Zach, as you mentioned, he has one heck of a resume, but I do think you missed the most important part, and that's not even directly from him, but in fact, his wife makes cookies for the defensive line. At least she did at Notre Dame.
That's a Greg Madison thing, isn't it?
I believe it is. They make a batch of cookies, they decorate them, they deliver them to the D-line if they record a sack. So I think, intangibles right there. That's what Mike Elston and family are going to be bringing to Ann Arbor. But no, you're exactly right with what you said. It's a big get for Michigan, especially after the departure of Sean Nua. He was around for 3 years. You know, I think he did a really solid job this year with the interior of the D-line. You know, he leaves and goes out west, and then Michigan has a big gap to fill. And especially with the amount of turnover on the D-line from this year heading into next year, which I'm sure we'll touch on in a bit. And you managed to get a guy who not only has he been really, really solid as a coach, but has also been a pretty fantastic recruiter. You're getting someone who is either as good as Sean Nua or almost, you know, I'd say very likely is a step up. And when you can do that after the year that Michigan had, that's really great news. And I think we've already seen that from the reaction from Notre Dame fans who are disappointed to see Mike Elston go. We've already heard from some recruits who are giving big thumbs up to that hire. And, you know, if you want to be that program that's competing at a Big Ten championship level, at a college football playoff level more consistently, this is the sort of reloading you have to do when you lose one of your coordinators.
Yeah. And I think that last part is something to really keep an eye on, because I don't know what he's going to be paid. I don't know what he was paid at Notre Dame, but I was running through the list of Jim Harbaugh's hires. And I think Jim Harbaugh has a great eye for young coaching talent. Like, I would almost trust him more when he hires like a 5-year-old at this point than, you know, an established proven coach, because it seems like, you know, whether it's Josh Gattis, Mike McDonald, you could run through the list a little bit more than that, but it does seem like he has a very good sense for who's ready to make that leap and keep climbing. But at the same time, this is a big boy hire. You know, I was thinking the last time Michigan straight up poached somebody as a lateral move from a legit, you know, top 15 program. Mike Hart, Indiana, when Indiana was coming off a good season, sure, but Indiana doesn't have the resources that Michigan does. Josh Gattis, he was technically co-offensive coordinator at Alabama, but I think all signs, even I think he even himself has admitted he wasn't the play caller. He wasn't really the coordinator. He was kind of the second coordinator there. And so, you know, they've been able to make some really good hires, but this is one of the rare, I guess, splashy poachings that Michigan, like, historically hasn't really done that either. So to me, I can't help but wonder the fact that there was at least some rumblings and smoke, you know, behind them getting the defensive line coach at Texas A&M, who's getting paid $850,000 a year. Yeah, I can't help but wonder if this is a little bit, we won't talk too much about the Harbaugh deal right now, but one of the things being mentioned is not only does Jim want more money, you know, to match his market value, but he wants his assistants to get more money. And maybe this is a sign that maybe Michigan's going to open up the purse strings a little bit more. Because if you look at the assistant coaching salaries, they're a lot more than you and I make, and a lot more than most of our listeners make. But, you know, to other programs, Michigan doesn't have a ton of, you know, $800,000 position assistant coaches. You know, they've got a lot of guys under $500,000 a year. And I don't think they're necessarily underpaid based on when they were hired, their market value. But obviously, when you make the college football playoff, it's time to spread that money around across the board to make sure you keep the train running the way it is. So yeah, I'm very curious to see what the salary is. It could just be the stars aligning a little bit. Brian Kelly leaves, goes to a program that is very different than Notre Dame. You know, Elston probably will be more at home somewhere in the Midwest based on his entire coaching track record than he would be. You know, he's not going to do the Brian Kelly and start talking in a Cajun accent and trying to hit the trail.
You know, I would like to see that though.
Right. And so, you know, this is probably a better fit. I'm sure at some point in his mind, he thought he would return to Michigan because he didn't just play here. You know, he was part of some very good teams in the 90s. He also, you know, his first year as a student assistant was 97. And I think he coached here until 2000, if that's off the top of my head. But he was at Michigan for a few years as a coach as well. And so this is in many ways going to be home for him. And so maybe the stars just aligned. But I also think, you know, you can tell by Notre Dame's reaction on the message boards on social media, they would have loved to have kept him. You know, I think that's fair to say. And I think it's fair to say this was a big win for Michigan in an offseason that has at least optically not quite gone according to plan. I don't think that they're in as much danger. You know, I think fans might be, you know, see the headlines and get a little dizzy. And with all these players leaving, with Jim Harbaugh, the rumors floating around, you know, this is a very solid win for Michigan. And let's go ahead and stick to the defensive line. We're going to talk about, you kind of go across the board, some of the biggest holes following the draft decisions along with the transfer portal. Not too many holes left by the transfer portal. It's been backups so far. Obviously, more depth is more depth, but I really think that the biggest hole and the area I identified as somewhere Michigan should really hit the transfer portal hard is, of course, that defensive line. You know, they didn't just lose Sean Nua. They also lost Aiden Hutchinson, who was expected to depart. David Ajabo, who's expected to depart. Christopher Hinton was not expected to depart. So that's something Michigan might need to keep an eye on. You know, I've identified kind of who I think could be next. Obviously, Mazi Smith still has a few days to officially announce if he's coming back for his senior year. But at this point, I kind of anticipate that he would, based on the fact that he hasn't announced. You never know. Taylor Upshaw has some experience. Brady McGregor, former blue chip recruit. You know, I think they have actually recruited the defensive tackle spot. I think their 2021 recruiting class was very good. Rayshon Benny, George Brooks, Ike Owuna. You know, I think they've got some pieces. Mike Morris had a good year. Chris Jenkins had a very good second season. But Alejandro, what is your thoughts on this defensive line? Who's coming back? How big of a deal is it that you know, Hutchinson, Ajabo, and Hinton are all heading to the NFL draft? Hutchinson was expected before the season. He was a senior, but the other two were early departures. And then kind of your thoughts on you know, what's top on Elston's to-do list? Is it transfer portal? Is it recruiting? Is it trying to mold maybe the clay that you have in front of you. Your thoughts on the defensive line?
Yeah, I think it's all of the above. I think there's no surprise, obviously, that Aiden Hutchinson went to the NFL. That was never really a question. David Ojabo, you know, as someone who couldn't really take advantage of the name and image and likeness benefits that some U.S.-born players or all of the U.S.-born players on the Michigan football team can take advantage of, it makes sense that he would go pro. And then Christopher Hinton, a bit more of a surprise. Little insider tidbit, he's probably the only guy who declared for the NFL draft so far that we didn't have a story pre-written for. Didn't fully see that one coming. But when you take a step back and look at, you know, how touted of a recruit he was, his family connections to the NFL, and he's been around the program now for 3 years, it makes sense that he would take that jump. But that means that Elson's going to come in and he's going to have a D-line that's replacing three of its starters, with Mozzie Smith still up in the air. And when you look at Michigan's defense, what they were able to do in 2021, interior of the D-line was one of the bigger questions coming in. And Hinton and Mozzie Smith really stepped into that role and didn't necessarily turn it into one of the biggest strengths on the team, but they were absolutely very solid. And they were one of the reasons that defense was one of the better ones in the country. But if you're losing Hutchinson and Ojabo, that's 25 sacks between the two of them. You cannot expect, even in your wildest dreams, that you're going to come in 2022 with anyone who can replace that sort of production. So whether you're looking at some younger guys to step up, whether you're hitting the transfer portal hard, I really do think you have to do both of those, because that's where you've lost the most after the 2021 season.
Yeah, I think the good news for Michigan is they have, you know, in terms of hitting the transfer portal, especially at the edge position, they have starting spots to sell. I think, you know, a lot of people talk about the academics. I think they're very legit, the academic hurdles. I think there is a lot of truth to that. But I think the thing that's actually hurt Michigan a lot is even last year, they didn't have, you will be the starter, you will be the key guy. They didn't have that at too many positions. I mean, you know, some of the transfer portal players that they looked at, granted, they were also late to the game last year because of all the coaching decisions. I don't think even at this point last year, Jim Harbaugh's contract was even finalized, and they didn't, I don't know if they had a defensive coordinator in mid-January. So this year, they're still behind because their season ended later than a lot of teams, but at least they're able to start making some of these calls a little sooner. And that's where Elston will be really impactful. And one thing to keep an eye on with Elston, I should have mentioned this earlier, the Notre Dame to Michigan hire is very valuable because he is not going to be someone who runs into a bunch of issues where suddenly all these players he has connections with don't want anything to do with him because he's going to a school that's that different than Michigan. Notre Dame and Michigan, honestly, Notre Dame is probably the most similar program to Michigan right now in terms of the geographic hurdles, in terms of the academic hurdles, and then also in terms of kind of where they are as a program. They had a little bit of, both of them had some down years in the 21st century. I mean, Ohio State, it's just really hard for either of those teams to compete against Ohio State right now because Ohio State never had a down, they had one down year and an interim coach year in the last 25 years. Michigan, Notre Dame, they've had a little bit more of their ups and downs. And I think they're both in the same boat in terms of who they recruit. Michigan probably has more recruiting battles with Notre Dame than any other program. Maybe Michigan State, but really, I think it is Notre Dame in terms of their top targets. And so I think Elston's going to have a little familiarity in that the guys he's gone after, the familiar names he knows on the recruiting trail or in the transfer portal market, they're going to be players Michigan can successfully pursue. But I think the big thing at edge is, you know, the edge defender position where Ojabo and Hutchinson, you mentioned it, 25 sacks between the two of them. Not a lot of returning sacks on Michigan's team. And so they're going to be able to go to whoever enters the portal, and you know, they missed on a few guys have already committed, but they're going to be able to say, you can be the next this. You can be the next David Ajabo. You can be the next Aiden Hutchinson. And whether they actually fill into those shoes, that is less likely, and that remains to be seen. But at the same time, you know, Michigan's draft success at that position is the proof's in the pudding at some point. It's just incredible. I think every starting either defensive end or edge defender has been drafted in the top 100 since Jim Harbaugh arrived. You know, Chris Wormley, Taco Charlton, Chase Winovich, Rashawn Gary, Kwity Paye, Aiden Hutchinson, David Ajabo. I mean, that's quite a run, and they've even had guys get drafted fairly high who weren't starters. You know, Josh Uche, Mike Dana, guys who were playing in the playoffs this weekend. So feels like they should be able to dream big on the transfer portal there. At tackle, I'm not quite as sure what they do, because I think if Mozzie Smith comes back, obviously if he departs, then they really need to hit the transfer portal. But if he comes back, I really liked what I saw out of Chris Jenkins and Mike Morris. You know, there's certainly Michigan should still hit the portal. I think I put them at a 5 or 6 out of 10 on how badly they need to hit the transfer portal when I did my story, kind of breaking down Michigan's transfer needs across the board. But I don't know that they can sell automatically a starting spot unless there's, you know, a future top 100 NFL draft pick just sitting in the portal. But usually those players either declare for the draft or they stick with the team that they've got because they're obviously a star and it's working. So yeah, it's going to be really interesting. I got to think that they're going to call up pretty much every edge defender that hits the portal. Tackle, they might be a little bit pickier, but at the same time, there's a need for some depth and some bodies. And that might be a one where they wait until the spring, see how George Rooks, Rayshon Benny, Ikawana, some of these younger guys, if they start looking good, then you might not see Michigan hit the portal. But if they start hitting the portal in March or April or May, you know, start seeing them linked to more players, then you might see a situation where they look a little harder. Now they are hosting one Tulane grad transfer. He's 312 pounds. He's coming this weekend. I'll pull up his name in just a second. But Alejandro, I guess from what you saw from who's next this season, what do you think of my assessment of the transfer portal needs? Is this like red alert for both positions? Am I maybe overselling the backup defensive tackles or underselling the edge backup edge defenders? What are some of your thoughts on just how urgent it is?
I wouldn't quite go as far as saying red alert. I think amber alert might be more appropriate. You're never going to have, or you can never expect to have replacements for Hutchinson and Ojabo, one-to-one replacements. That's just not going to happen. I think you're right that Michigan got some good play out of its defensive tackles this year. Obviously, they didn't necessarily show up to the same level as a Hinton or a Mozzie Smith, but they were serviceable, and you kind of expect, especially with some of the younger guys, to take that next step. You know, you get the freshman to sophomore year jump with a lot of the guys on the D-line, and that's kind of what you expect to see out of, you know, a guy like Rayshon Benny, for example. He's a guy who can highly touted recruit, who can make that second year leap and really be a contributor when there are other absences on the line. I mean, going back to Mike Elston, though, that's one of the reasons why this hire is so important. This is someone who had more than a decade of experience with alongside Brian Kelly. Brian Kelly, actually, I just want to read a quote from him. Brian Kelly said of Mike Elston that he's without a doubt a future head coach, one that we're very, very fortunate to have on our staff, and he's a vital resource in recruiting. In fact, Elston was the recruiting coordinator for a couple of years. I believe it was 2016 through 18. He was not in that position, and then Notre Dame brought him back to that position in 2021, and he put together a really good class as recruiting coordinator. He was speaking a few months ago and saying how his focus is, how can we get recruits to say yes? How can we get them to say yes to Notre Dame? How can we get them to say yes to buying into the message, the philosophy? And when you're looking at position groups on the defensive end, whether it's your D tackles or your edge rushers, where Michigan is going to be looking for recruits and potentially looking for those transfer portal candidates, you want a guy who can get those prospects to say yes. So that's where I think that Elston is really going to make a difference. As you said, already saw him out and about wearing a Michigan Letterman jacket, and you need him to make that immediate impact right there.
By the way, the name of the Tulane grad transfer, Jeffrey Johnson. I just didn't want to get it wrong. So he's 312 pounds, 6'3", former three-star recruit from Mississippi. I mean, it seems like most of his suitors are Southern. So we'll see, you know, if he, you know, he's officially visiting this weekend. So he'll find out really quickly if he wants to hang out for a Michigan winter. But at the same time, you know, certainly a starting job to sell at Michigan. So it's not going to be, and my assumption, given that Michigan didn't have a defensive line coach, is that this is kind of the analyst, but also maybe Mike McDonald, George Helo kind of getting in there saying, here's the role we see you fit for. So we'll be interested to see how that goes, because that, I mean, he would, he's been very productive at Tulane. I imagine he would start next to Mozzie Smith. And then the one thing to keep an eye on is Michigan. They kind of went schematically. They didn't actually do a true 3-4. I wouldn't say it was a 4-3, but like they had Ajabo and Hutchinson in a lot of the time. And really, I think Mike McDonald's vision is maybe three defensive tackle types. Now, a couple of them you want to be a little bit more agile, like maybe a Mike Morris or a Julius Welshoff. And then you have your big nose in the middle. We didn't actually see a ton of that this year because they had two very great edge defenders. So that will be something to keep an eye on. It might be dependent on who's picking up the phone when they call, you know, in terms of the transfer portal and you know, who stands out in the spring. If it's a lot of guys in the interior, if it's Mozzie Smith, Mike Morris, you know, Julius Welshoff and Chris Jenkins, if that's your strength, well, then maybe you try to find a way to get three of those guys on the field at the same time more often. So we'll be interesting to see. I mean, they can, you know, we know Mike McDonald likes to mix and match. Probably, I think Georgia and Michigan State both exploited how much Michigan likes to mix and match, you know, its personnel, but that is something to keep an eye on is I think who's good for you is going to be who has to be on the field. And so finding a way to get close to your top 11, coaches say that it's very hard to get if your best 11 players are all defensive linemen, they're not on the field, but same time, maybe with Hinton's departure, that certainly can't say it as confidently, but perhaps the interior is a strength of this defensive line, and perhaps maybe you've got a situation where you want some of those more of those linebackers on the field. I mean, we'll have to see what a guy like Jaden Hood does in year two. We're going to hit a break on the other side. We'll talk about the rest of the, we're not going to go one by one, but we'll talk about some of the other key departures and where Michigan stands, whether they need to look at the transfer portal, some of the biggest holes on this team heading into spring ball. We'll talk about it all. You're listening to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Host Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
All right, welcome back. Thanks for waiting. So the other surprise departure, I don't know, I guess expanding my viewpoint, it doesn't seem as surprising, but I think cornerback is very, it's an interesting position because Vincent Gray declared, I had a story written on him making a decision, but I kind of had assumed he was coming back. Again, zooming out a little bit, I'm like, okay, they have DJ Turner. He emerged as their best cornerback. They love Jaden McBurrows. I think he was injured toward the end of the season, but they really love what they have in him. Will Johnson, a five-star coming in, got to think he's going to have a chance to be an instant impact recruit. And then if Jamon Green comes back, which he has not made a decision, but I think if he hasn't made a decision by now, I would put the odds slightly in favor of him staying. I guess that room does get full pretty quickly, but Vincent Gray departed. Andre Seldon departed, and he had an interesting tweet. We don't need to discuss it because you know he's entitled to say what's on his mind. But he mentioned you know, he didn't want to leave Michigan, but he asked his Twitter followers to imagine you know being told by your employer that you can't get promoted no matter how hard you work. Now, you know, I won't speak for him. I won't speak for Michigan, but that has me thinking that they really like McBurrows that much and that he's someone that they really think will be a starter for them next year. And then Darren Green Warren also transferred out. I think he landed at Nevada. If I'm missing a cornerback who was transferred out, let me know. But still, I mean, you're talking about three guys who have departed. George Johnson as well. I think he wants to become a receiver elsewhere, but he was someone who was actually scratching the two deep this fall, at least early on in the season before I think McBurrows kind of maybe passed him. So Alejandro, your thoughts on this cornerback room? It's interesting. You don't, if you're Michigan, you don't want players to transfer because you like the depth. At the same time, I do think that they probably have their four best guys still. I don't know if Vincent Gray would have beaten McBurrows or would have beaten Will Johnson. This year he did, but it does seem like they have a nice four, and maybe you're seeing something where Steve Klinkscale, who's coaching that cornerback's room, he was a late addition. I don't think he arrived he wasn't hired by Michigan until June last year. Maybe you're starting to see him take a little bit of control and say, here's who I think should be a starter moving forward. Your thoughts on the cornerback room? I don't think it's quite as dire as the defensive line, but it has been busy. I mean, they do have a lot of players leave from this year's team.
Yeah, and it's not just corner. I mean, you look at the whole secondary, and you're going to have a lot of new faces next year. Obviously, there was no surprise when Dax Hill declared for the NFL draft. That's something we all sort of expected. But he's a player who gave Michigan a lot of flexibility with the secondary. You know, he was someone you knew was not going to get edged. You could put him on the wide side of the field. You could leave him on an island a little bit and know that he was going to make the play. Speaking of Vincent Gray, you know, he did have a better 2021 after the rough year that was 2020. But as you said, with the amount of talent that Michigan has in that cornerback room, you wonder if he did kind of read the room a little bit and know that this might be his best opportunity to take that next step, given the amount of playing time he had this year and given that he did put together a solid year, even if he did get picked on a little bit by Georgia in the college football playoff. But you do have a lot of talent, and I think you're exactly right with Will Johnson. He was a real cornerstone of that class. And he's, you know, when you're a DB, that's the sort of position where you can come in, make it to college, be an early enrollee as he is, and start having a pretty instant impact. But Michigan hit the cornerback position pretty hard for this class. You know, they've signed six DBs, and I think you're going to see some of them get some playing time next year. But they do have the talent. They do have, like you said, McBurrows, whether it's DJ Turner, Jamon Green, and a lot of younger players who stepped up at the end of 2021, they have the talent. So it's not so much, a dire situation as much as it is who's the next man up, and how can Michigan account for the gaps that are going to be that are going to exist in the secondary, given the amount of talent that's leaving after 2021.
Yeah, the one thing that they will be missing, because we always joke, Hunter, you haven't necessarily been a part of this for that long, but like our podcast, we always talk about how underrated Brad Hawkins is, and here we go forgetting to mention him again. But he only allowed 4 receptions all season as a starting safety who played. Oh, how many coverage snaps did he play? 444 coverage snaps, and he only allowed 4 receptions, 28 yards. You know, he had 3 pass breakups. You know, he did not allow, or he allowed 1 touchdown, but 15 targets, 4 receptions allowed. I mean, he was excellent in pass coverage, gave them well above average for the safety position. That's not always a position where you have the prettiest coverage stats, and he was excellent. So he's another player that they're going to have to replace. Yeah, you're right to bring safety in, because I imagine some of these players are going to be moving around a little bit. But at safety, it seems like they have 2 starters ready to go, R.J. Moten and Rod Moore. I thought Rod Moore really had a fantastic November. I thought he really emerged for Michigan, the kind of emergence that Michigan badly needed, especially with 2 safeties kind of out the door or heading out the door. You know, Moten, he's got room to improve, but I think he's got the athleticism to do it, especially given all he did as a redshirt freshman this year. So going to be very interesting to see. I think would not be surprised. I'm not predicting this, but I would not be surprised if after spring ball, maybe a couple other players transfer from the secondary, if they're not in the 2 deep, because there are a lot of players kind of, I almost forget who's at safety and who's at corner because it seems like they bounce around so much. But players who have not played so far who are in their 3rd and 4th year. And one thing on Vincent Gray, he was a surprise declaration, but he also had his degree or will have his degree. I mean, he's a 4th year player. I think I would advise fans, not just Michigan fans, but college football fans, stop penciling guys in as 5-year players. You know, I think at this point, you know, with how college football is, you know, 5th-year players are more the exception, at least staying at the same program that they were at before. I mean, players want to play. They want to start, and if they are starting, then they want to go to the NFL. And once you have your degree, there really isn't a huge argument against it. Maybe some NIL deals, but I don't know if 2nd or 3rd cornerback is going to get that kind of deal. So I probably would have told Vincent Gray, you know, kind of factoring in all of this, said, yeah, this is probably a very good shot for you to go. So it's going to be interesting. I think if I were Michigan, you know, the transfer portal at the secondary level, I would go for experience. If you see a grad transfer who wants to be a part of the program, you probably can't guarantee a starting job unless it's like a real top shelf guy. And you know, top shelf guy, once again, might not be trying to transfer just yet. So unless it's a top tier guy, probably can't sell an automatic starting job, but you can sell the opportunity to compete. And then I think you can be the veteran leader of this secondary, because I think they have a lot of talent. I think the group can be good next year, but it's also inexperienced, which means that there's going to be some variance and there's going to be some ups and downs and there's some uncertainty. They don't know what these players are going to look like in spring ball or in fall camp. You know, Brad Hawkins, Dax Hill, they kind of knew what they were getting. And so, I think if there's a grad transfer, you know, I'm thinking like someone from a MAC program, if there's like a grad transfer who wants to give it his best shot at Michigan, you know, maybe this is the year to do that. Same time, they do have a lot of players in the secondary. You don't want to overcrowd the room, but they don't have a lot of guys with experience. If Jamon Green returns, he would really be, him and DJ Turner are really the only guys who have like hundreds and hundreds of game snaps and multiple years of doing this, which is a testament to RJ Moten and Rod Moore for stepping up as freshmen, you know, maybe passing some slightly older, more experienced players. But that also does put you in a position where you're going in next, you're not entirely sure what you're going to get. All right, Alejandro, last little bit for us. You mentioned a lot of draft declarations. You mentioned a lot of transfer portal. A lot of the stuff we kind of expected, especially the draft declarations. You know, Andrew Stuber, Hassan Haskins, Josh Ross, not much of a surprise there. As a fifth-year guy, Stuber was a fifth-year guy as well. Not a ton of surprises, but is there, outside of the two position groups that we've already talked about, is there somewhere on Michigan's roster where you are looking and saying they should really look hard in the portal here? I mean, they're going to look at the transfer portal every day anyways, you know, because if a good player comes along, you're not going to pass that up. But is there somewhere where if you're Michigan, you're maybe digging a little extra hard, recruiting a little extra hard, trying to fill a role from some of these departing players?
I think if you've been listening to this entire podcast and if you're still with us, first of all, thank you. But second of all, the theme that you may have heard is that there isn't too much concern on the offensive side of the ball. I think that none of the departures on the offensive side, maybe with the exception of Dalen Baldwin, the receiver, were really much of a surprise and will really impact our assessment of the offense next season. On the defensive side, that's where some of those concerns pile up a little bit more. I'd say linebacker position is somewhere where you always want to be looking at the portal. Linebacker position is one of the, if not the most difficult position to play. And Michigan will be looking to replace, they'll be putting in some new faces next year at linebacker. And so if you can, similar to what you're saying in the secondary, if you can get a veteran guy, someone who really knows defense well and can be either an impact player or can be a mentor to some of the younger talented faces that Michigan has, that's where I think you make some calls in the transfer portal, because you get a guy, you get a good linebacker, someone who can really be a captain of the defense, and that helps solidify that entire unit. And when you're going to have so many new faces next year across the defense, that can really make a difference.
Yeah. Can't disagree with that. I think there's, the more the merrier, really, for good linebackers. And you had some players who still had their ups and downs. You know, Junior Colson, I think he'll be fantastic, but I don't know if he'll be, you know, you can't guarantee that he's going to be first team All Big Ten after what he showed as a freshman. I thought he had a great freshman year. He was named a freshman All-American in multiple publications, including 24/7 Sports. But does that leap come in year two or year three? You know, Nakai Hill Green, I thought he had some great moments. He also, you know, had his struggles. And so yeah, there's definitely room for a lot of improvement there. And that's a position where Mike McDonald, I think, you know, he's very comfortable in the players he's recruited, but I think also, you know, he'll be able to vet himself. Him and George Hilo will kind of be able to see who's going to really help Michigan and who's not. Offensive side, you know, I will give Michigan credit. They did already pick up two transfers, you know, both from Virginia. Andrew Gentry, who's, I guess, technically a recruit. I don't know if that's a transfer portal because he was serving a Mormon mission. And then Oluwatimi, Remington finalist for Virginia. His PFF numbers check out. He's very good. I think that's a perfect fit. You know, Michigan's losing Andrew Vastardis, and they add Oluwatimi. You know, Virginia academically, I think, is technically ahead of Michigan. And so you know, there's no trouble there. I think Michigan, they can always go after a Virginia transfer. You know, because you think those credits will transfer. That's really the thing when we say academics. It's not that these players can't necessarily get into Michigan, but Michigan's transfer system, and you know, a lot of Alejandro, you and I probably know people from our time at Michigan who transferred in and lost a bunch of credits, or they had to really, you know, scour that system like a hawk in order to not lose an extra semester of credit. So that's that hurts Michigan, I think, more than the actual admissions part of things. But regardless, Virginia credits will transfer over. I thought that was really savvy, and they took care of that before they even played in the playoff. They didn't wait. They saw those guys and they said, "Yep, they'll help us." And Gentry was a former recruiting target of Michigan. Probably would have committed to Michigan had Bronco Mendenhall not gone from BYU to UVA. I think they always liked Michigan, and when Mendenhall left UVA, they said, "Okay, well, is Michigan still interested?" So that one was pretty easy. But I thought the center pickup was big. I agree with you. I think linebacker is probably the next most important. I do think there is some value. Well, first of all, I should say quarterback. If a player transfers out, they've already lost Dan Villari. If another quarterback transfers out, then yes, they have to get someone, maybe like an Alan Bowman type, and Alan Bowman might technically still be on the team next year, but someone like that who understands that they're probably not going to start, but that they can be one play away, that they'd be very valuable. But I think the one underrated area Michigan could pursue is, and they did try to, with, I believe his name was Diamante Trianum. He was Arizona State's like number two. He was their Thunder back. Thunder and Lightning's the cliche. He was the Thunder. And he ended up committing to Ohio State to play linebacker. Sounds like he grew up an Ohio State fan. I think he's from Akron. But if you can find maybe a bruiser back, a Thunder back, whatever you want to call them, a big guy that'll eat up some of those third down yards, some of those short yardage situations, because Blake Corum, Donovan Edwards are fantastic. But where they're fantastic and have the NFL potential is their abilities as pass catchers, as outside the tackle runners, as shifty guys. Hassan Haskins it started out quietly, then it became very loud because he had over 1,200 yards, but he really carried Michigan's offense this season at times. I think back to that Penn State game. It was only 154 yards, but man, it was a tough 154 yards. And obviously everyone knows about his 5 touchdowns against Ohio State. I don't think they need a starter at running back. I think Edwards and Corum are going to take up most of the carries. But if they can find somebody who maybe in that 220, 225 pound frame, 6 foot, 225, who can go between the tackles and not just go between the tackles and take up some yards, but like really likes the contact, really likes that opportunity. Maybe like a BJ Askew, but more of a modern version. So he's not going to be a fullback, but someone like Haskins, or maybe even bigger, who can just be kind of that bowling ball up the middle for Michigan. I think there is some value there. I don't know that it's worth, calling up every running back, but if you see someone in the portal, maybe put a couple calls in. Maybe there's someone who can help you there. Your thoughts on that? Am I crazy for that? I just feels like they could probably, not knowing what CJ Stokes or Tavier Dunlap, two guys who probably will fit that mold eventually, but not knowing what they're going to bring this year, that was maybe the one other position I was keeping an eye on.
I think all Michigan really needs to do is find the most well-built hurdler that it has on its campus, put him in pads and a uniform and a helmet, and get him on the football team. That's really all you need to replace Hassan Haskins.
There you go.
But in all honesty, there's a lot to be said for having a bruising running back like Haskins was last year. He's a guy who, he would always move the pile forward a couple yards, and especially as Michigan had some struggles in short yardage situations, especially when they really had to grind out games, Hassan Haskins was that sort of player. I'm not comparing him to Derrick Henry, but he's the sort of guy who, when you hand him the ball 15, 20 times by the fourth quarter and it's cold out and he's lowering his shoulder and driving forward every time, he wears down a defense. And you absolutely saw that against Penn State. You saw that obviously in the Ohio State game. Michigan doesn't necessarily have that next year. I don't think they need it. I think I'm going to disagree with you a little bit. I think that Corum and Edwards, like, they're not Haskins. They're not that same physical stature, but they're both guys who pack a punch themselves. And also, I think Michigan's going to be a little bit more dynamic in that run game and in that passing game, incorporating the running backs. And I think that's going to bring an extra dynamic that you couldn't quite get out of Haskins. But I could see where it would be helpful to have a guy who can do short yardage. I guess we'll see. I don't think it's a priority. I think really the defensive end is where Michigan should be most focused for transfer portal needs. I think Michigan can find a guy to be their short yardage back, whether or not they find someone in the portal, like they have those guys on their roster. But the more the merrier, right?
Yeah, I think that's the big thing is they're not looking for a starter, right? They're not looking for someone who's going to carry the ball 20 times a game. And let's be clear, Corum, he's been called pound for pound the strongest player on the team. I believe he told us in August that he squats 315 pounds 25 times in a row, you know, and it does 25 reps. I got to make sure I speak the right weightlifting language. But, so he's not some slouch. I mean, he's built. You can see his off-season training. I mean, he's a strong dude. And so, yeah, this would not be a glamorous position. This would be someone who wants to be a part of a winning team and likes to hit, you know, and wants kind of that cult following at Michigan because you know, if you pick up some after contact yards or some fall forward yards, Michigan fan base will embrace that and they'll love you for it. Cause you're right. Edwards, he's not weak either. You know, I really, the only weakness in his recruiting profile was that he just fumbled the ball sometimes. You know, he had some ball security issues. I mean, he was compared to Alvin Kamara. It's not like Alvin Kamara's not running between the tackles ever. I mean, he's productive all over the place. You know, so yeah, I think they both can do the job. I don't think that they're shy of it, but that was maybe the one spot on the offense. If I'm looking and I'm thinking, what could they add to this offense if they could? Because I actually think like Andrew Stuber, I think they've got two offensive tackles ready to go: Carson Barnhart, Trente Jones. You know, and who knows? Maybe Andrew Gentry, Jeffrey Percy, Tristan Bounds. You know, those guys offer some very good size and reach to go with Barnhart and Jones' athleticism. So yeah, going to be interesting, but you bring up a good point that maybe the passing attack is just better next year and they don't, maybe the middle of the field isn't as crowded. Maybe they can spread this, you know, opposing defenses out and they don't necessarily need to run these tough yardage situations. So plenty to debate, to stew on. We'll have lots of stories. The draft deadline is, I believe, Monday. So eventually this stuff will be completely finalized and then we can start going position by position in our stories. You know, taking a look at who's still around, who's taking off and what Michigan needs to do to replicate their success. I mean, that is the one thing, and I think this is a big part of why Elston hiring happened. I think it's gonna be a big part of any transfer portal pickups. Michigan is able to sell a much better product right now. Last year, Jim Harbaugh, you know, not only did he replace six assistant coaches, he had to do it without any guarantee that they would have the job more than a year or two. I mean, he was going in and I'm sure he did his best selling, but you know, you think about Mike McDonald and George Hilo and Steve Klingscale and some of these coaches that you know, Mike Hart that took over these jobs, they didn't know what Michigan was going to be. Michigan was coming off a 2-4 season and its coach was very publicly on the hot seat. Now, you know, I guess there is still technically some uncertainty, but it's the good kind of uncertainty that NFL teams might take Jim Harbaugh. But, you know, they're coming off a playoff appearance. They're coming off a Big Ten title. You can tell assistant coaches and you can tell players that's the standard. So that is, I guess, the one perk that Michigan has this year as opposed to last is that, you know, when they fill these holes, they can go out and hit the trail as a top 10 program. They don't have to, you know, convince people that the team might be good this season. They the proof's in the pudding. And so it's going to be very interesting to follow. Obviously, we'll have all the updates over to MichiganInsider.com. michigan.247sports.com. Check it all out. We also have basketball and recruiting podcasts. We all kind of took a couple breaths after the season ended just to recalibrate, recharge the batteries a little bit. But there, Tim McCormick and Sam Webb had a basketball pod the other day. We will probably have one Sunday or Monday. Kind of stay tuned, see how Michigan looks against Illinois tonight. And then obviously we'll get back into our once or twice a week rhythm that we're typically in. For Alejandro Zuniga, I am Zach Shaw. This has been the Wolverine 24/7 podcast. Hope you had fun. Hope you learned something. We'll see you next time.
The hit Paramount Plus original docuseries returns.
The last time I saw Max, he looked at us laughing, and then everything changed in a blink of an eye.
My feeling as a detective is that he was murdered.
Yahoo Entertainment calls it a spine-chilling docuseries showcasing real-life tragedies.
What if it was your child who went missing?
We need to know the truth.
Never seen again. Now streaming on Paramount+.